Chapter 21. Only inside the entrance did Vinicius comprehend the whole difficulty of the undertaking. The house was large, of several stories, one of the kind of which thousands were built in Rome, in view of profit from rent. Hence, as a rule, they were built so hurriedly and badly that scarcely a year passed in which numbers of them did not fall on the heads of tenants. Real hives, too high and too narrow, full of chambers and little dens, in which poor people fixed themselves too numerously. In a city where many streets had no names, those houses had no numbers. The owners committed the collection of rent to slaves, who, not obliged by the city government to give names of occupants, were ignorant themselves of them frequently. To find someone by inquiry in such a house was often very difficult, especially when there was no gatekeeper. Vinicius and Croton came to a narrow, corridor-like passage walled in on four sides, forming a kind of common atrium for the whole house, with a fountain in the middle whose stream fell into a stone basin fixed in the ground. At all the walls were internal stairways, some of stone, some of wood, leading to galleries from which there were entrances to lodgings. There were lodgings on the ground, also, some provided with wooden doors, others separated from the yard by woolen screens only. These, for the greater part, were worn, rent, or patched. The hour was early, and there was not a living soul in the yard. It was evident that all were asleep in the house except those who had returned from Astrianum. "What shall we do, Lord?" asked Croton, halting. "Let us wait here. Someone may appear," replied Vinicius. "We should not be seen in the yard." At this moment, he thought Chio's counsel practical. If there were some tens of slaves present, it would be easy to occupy the gate, which seemed the only exit, search all the lodgings simultaneously, and thus come to Lygis. Otherwise Christians, who surely were not lacking in that house, might give notice that people were seeking her. In view of this, there was risk in inquiring of strangers. Vinicius stopped to think whether it would not be better to go for his slaves. Just then, from behind a screen hiding a remoter lodging, came a man with a sieve in his hand, and approached the fountain. At the first glance the young tribune recognized Ursus. "That is the legion," whispered Vinicius. "Am I to break his bones now? Wait a while." Ursus did not notice the two men, as they were in the shadow of the entrance, and he began quietly to sink in water vegetables which filled the sieve. It was evident that, after a whole night spent in the cemetery, he intended to prepare a meal. After a while the washing was finished. He took the wet sieve and disappeared behind the screen. Croton and Vinicius followed him, thinking that they would come directly to Lygia's lodgings. Their astonishment was great when they saw that the screen divided from the court, not lodgings, but another dark corridor, at the end of which was a little garden containing a few cypresses, some myrtle bushes, and a small house fixed to the windowless stone wall of another stone building. Both understood at once that this was for them a favoring circumstance. In the courtyard all the tenants might assemble. The seclusion of the little house facilitated the enterprise. They would set aside defenders, or rather Ursus, quickly, and would reach the street just as quickly with the captured Lygia, and there they would help themselves. It was likely that no one would attack them. If attacked, they would say that a hostage was fleeing from Caesar. Vinicius would declare himself then to the guards, and summon their assistance. Ursus was almost entering the little house, when the sound of steps attracted his attention. He halted, and, seeing two persons, put his sieve on the balustrade and turned to them. "What do ye want here?" asked he. "Thee," said Vinicius. Then, turning to Croton, he said in a low, hurried voice, "Kill." Croton rushed at him like a tiger, and in one moment, before the legion was able to think or to recognize his enemies, Crown had caught him in his arms of steel. Vinicius was too confident in the man's preternatural strength to wait for the end of the struggle. He passed the two, sprang to the door of the little house, pushed it open, and found himself in a room a trifle dark, lighted, however, by a fire burning in the chimney. A gleam of this fire fell on Lydia's face directly. A second person, sitting at the fire, was that old man who had accompanied the young girl and Ursus on the road from Astrianum. Vinicius rushed in so suddenly that before Lydia could recognize him, he had seized her by the waist, and, raising her, rushed toward the door again. The old man barred the way, it is true, but pressing the girl with one arm to his breast, Vinicius pushed him aside with the other, which was free. The hood fell from his head, and at sight of that face, which was known to her, and which at that moment was terrible, the blood grew cold in Lydia from fright, and the voice died in her throat. She wished to summon aid, but had not the power. Equally vain was her wish to grasp the door, to resist. Her fingers slipped along the stone, and she would have fainted, but for the terrible picture which struck her eyes, when Vinicius rushed into the garden. Ursus was holding in his arms some man doubled back completely, with hanging head and mouth filled with blood. When he saw them, he struck the head once more with his fist, and in the twinkle of an eye sprang toward Vinicius like a raging wild beast. Death! Thought the young patrician. Then he heard, as through a dream, the scream of Lydia, "Kill not!" He felt that something, as it were a thunderbolt, opened the arms with which he held Lydia, then the earth turned round with him, and the light of day died in his eyes. Shiloh, hidden behind the angle of the corner house, was waiting for what would happen, since curiosity was struggling with fear in him. He thought that, if they succeeded in carrying off Lydia, he would fare well near Vinicius. He feared Urban no longer, for he also felt certain that Croton would kill him. And he calculated that in case a gathering should begin on the streets, which so far were empty, if Christians, or people of any kind, should offer resistance, he, Chio, would speak to them as one representing authority, as an executor of Caesar's will, and if need came, call the guards to aid the young patrician against the street rabble, thus winning to himself fresh favor. In his soul he judged, yet, that the young tribune's method was unwise. Considering, however, Croton's terrible strength, he admitted that it might succeed, and thought, if it go hard with him, Vinicius can carry the girl, and Croton clear the way. Delay grew wearisome, however, the silence of the entrance which he watched alarmed him. If they do not hit upon her hiding place, and make an uproar, they will frighten her. But this thought was not disagreeable, for Shiloh understood that in that event he would be necessary again to Vinicius, and could squeeze afresh a goodly number of sestertia from the tribune. Whatever they do, said he to himself, they will work for me, though no one divines that. Oh gods! Oh gods! Only permit me, and he stopped suddenly, for it seemed to him that someone was bending forward through the entrance. Then, squeezing up to the wall, he began to look, holding the breath in his breast. And he had not deceived himself, for a head thrust itself half out of the entrance and looked around. After a while, however, it vanished. That is Vinicius, or Croton, thought Shiloh. But if they have taken the girl, why does she not scream, and why are they looking out to the street? They must meet people anyhow, for before they reach the CARMN tilde there will be movement in the city. What is that? By the immortal gods! And suddenly the remnant of his hair stood on end. In the door appeared Ursus, with the body of Croton hanging on his arm, and looking around once more, he began to run, bearing it along the empty street toward the river. Shiloh made himself as flat against the wall as a bit of mud. I am lost, if he sees me, thought he. But Ursus ran past the corner quickly, and disappeared beyond the neighboring house. Chio, without further waiting, his teeth chattering from terror, ran along the cross street with a speed which even in a young man might have roused admiration. If he sees MC from a distance when he is returning, he will catch and kill me, said he to himself. S save me, Zeus! Save me, Apollo! Save me, Hermes! Save me, O God of the Christians! I will leave Rome, I will return to Mesembria, but save me from the hands of that demon. And that legion who had killed Croton seemed to him at that moment some superhuman being. While running, he thought that lie might be some god who had taken the form of a barbarian. At that moment he believed in all the gods of the world, and in all myths, at which he jeered usually. It flew through his head too, that it might be the god of the Christians who had killed Croton, and his hair stood on end again at the thought that he was in conflict with such a power. Only when he had run through a number of alleys, and saw some workmen coming toward him from a distance, was he calmed somewhat. Breath failed in his breast, so he sat on the threshold of a house, and began to wipe, with a corner of his mantle, his sweat-covered forehead. I am old, and need calm, said he. The people coming toward him turned into some little side street, and again the place round about was empty. The city was sleeping yet. And the morning movement began earlier in the wealthier parts of the city, where the slaves of rich houses were forced to rise before daylight, in portions inhabited by a free population, supported at the cost of the state, hence unoccupied. They woke rather late, especially in winter. Chio, after he had sat some time on the threshold, felt a piercing cold, so he rose, and, convincing himself that he had not lost the purse received from Vinicius, turned toward the river with a step now much slower. I may see Croton's body somewhere, said he to himself. Oh gods! That legion, if he is a man, might make millions of sestertia in the course of 1 year. For if he choked Croton, like a whelp, who can resist him? They would give for his every appearance in the arena as much gold as he himself weighs. He guards that maiden better than Cerberus does Hades. But may Hades swallow him, for all that. I will have nothing to do with him. He is too bony. But where shall I begin in this case? A dreadful thing has happened. If he has broken the bones of such a man as Croton, beyond a doubt the soul of Vinicius is puling above that cursed house now, awaiting his burial. By Castor. But he is a patrician, a friend of Caesar, a relative of Petronius, a man known in all Rome, a military tribune. His death cannot pass without punishment. Suppose I were to go to the Praetorian camp, or the guards of the city, for instance. Here he stopped and began to think, but said after a while, Woe is me! Who took him to that house if not I? His freedmen and his slaves know that I came to his house, and some of them know with what object. What will happen, if they suspect me of having pointed out to him purposely the house in which his death met him? Though it appear afterward, in the court, that I did not wish his death, they will say, that I was the cause of it. Besides, he is a patrician, hence in no event can I avoid punishment. But if I leave Rome in silence, and go far away somewhere, I shall place myself under still greater suspicion. It was bad in every case. The only question was to choose the less evil. Rome was immense. Still Chilo felt that it might become too small for him. Any other man might go directly to the prefect of the city guards, and tell what had happened, and, though some suspicion might fall on him, await the issue calmly. But Chilo's whole past was of such character, that every closer acquaintance with the prefect of the city, or the prefect of the guard, must cause him very serious trouble, and confirm also every suspicion which might enter the heads of officials. On the other hand, to flee would be, to confirm Petronius in the opinion, that Vinicius had been betrayed and murdered through conspiracy. Petronius was a powerful man, who could command the police of the whole empire, and who beyond doubt, would try to find the guilty parties even at the ends of the earth. Still, Chilo thought to go straight to him, and tell what had happened. Yes, that was the best plan. Petronius was calm, and Chilo might be sure of this, at least, that he would hear him to the end. Petronius, who knew the affair from its inception, would believe in Chio's innocence more easily than would the prefects. But to go to him, it was needful to know with certainty what had happened to Vinicius. Chilo did not know that. He had seen, it is true, the legends dealing with Crown's body to the river, but nothing more. Vinicius might be killed, but he might be wounded or detained. Now it occurred to Chilo for the first time that surely the Christians would not dare to kill a man so powerful, a friend of Caesar, and a high military official, for that kind of act might draw on them a general persecution. It was more likely that they had detained him by superior force, to give Lydia means to hide herself a second time. This thought filled Chilo with hope. If that legion dragon has not torn him to pieces at the first attack, he is alive, and if he is alive he himself will testify that I have not betrayed him, and then not only does nothing threaten me, but oh Hermes, count again on two heifers, a fresh field is opening. I can inform one of the freedmen where to seek his lord, and whether he goes to the prefect or not is his affair, the only point being that I should not go. Also, I can go to Petronius, and count on a reward. I have found Lydia, now I shall find Vinicius, and then again Lydia. It is needful to know first whether Vinicius is dead or living. Here it occurred to him that he might go in the night to the baker Danas and inquire about Ursus. But he rejected that thought immediately. He preferred to have nothing to do with Ursus. He might suppose, justly, that if Ursus had not killed Glaucus he had been warned, evidently, by the Christian elder to whom he had confessed his design, warned that the affair was an unclean one, to which some traitor had persuaded him. In every case, at the mere recollection of Ursus, a shiver ran through Chio's whole body. But he thought that in the evening he would send Eurysius for news to that house in which the thing had happened. Meanwhile he needed refreshment, a bath, and rest. The sleepless night, the journey to Astrianum, the flight from the Trans-Tiber, had wearied him exceedingly. One thing gave him permanent comfort. He had on his person two purses, that which Vinicius had given him at home, and that which he had thrown him on the way from the cemetery. In view of this happy circumstance, and of all the excitement through which he had passed, he resolved to eat abundantly, and drink better wine than he drank usually. When the hour for opening the wine shop came at last, he did so in such a marked measure that he forgot the bath. He wished to sleep, above all, and drowsiness overcame his strength, so that he returned with tottering step to his dwelling in the Subura, where a slave woman, purchased with money obtained from Vinicius, was waiting for him. When he had entered a sleeping room, as dark as the den of a fox, he threw himself on the bed, and fell asleep in one instant. He woke only in the evening, or rather he was roused by the slave woman, who called him to rise, for someone was inquiring, and wished to see him on urgent business. The watchful Chilo came to himself in one moment, threw on his hooded mantle hastily, and, commanding the slave woman to stand aside, looked out cautiously. And he was benumbed. For he saw before the door of the sleeping room the gigantic form of Ursus. At that sight he felt his feet and head grow icy cold, the heart ceased to beat in his bosom, and shivers were creeping along his back. For a time he was unable to speak, then with chattering teeth he said, or rather groaned, "Ira, I am not at home, I don't know that, good man, I told him, that thou wert at home, but asleep, Lord," answered the girl, "he asked to rouse thee. O gods! I will command, that thou," but Ursus, as if impatient of delay, approached the door of the sleeping room, and, bending, thrust in his head. "O Chilo Chilonites," said he, "Pax Tecum, Pax, Pax," answered Chio. "O best of Christians! Yes, I am Chilo, but this is a mistake, I do not know thee." "Chilo Chilonites," repeated Ursus, "thy lord, Vinicius, summons thee to go with me to him." Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.